everybody. You are listening to my dad on the Handgun World Podcast. Why does he carry a gun? Because he can't carry a cop.
Hello, everyone. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Welcome to episode number 316 of the Handgun World Podcast. Hey, I'm just an everyday guy, folks. This is just a podcast that's put out by an everyday dude like me. And I do a little bit of firearms training on the side, but hey, my roots don't come, or actually I should say my background doesn't come from law enforcement or military or gunsmith or anything like that. My background comes from being just a Yankee with a gun, born in New York City, raised in Wisconsin. Now I live in the great gun-friendly state of Texas. Well, this week, I'm being a little bit lazy. This week, what I'm going to do is I am going to let you hear my interview once again with Paul Lathrop from the Polite Society podcast. I don't know if you listen to that show. You may want to seriously give that show a listen if you don't. Paul recently asked me to be a guest. That came out last Wednesday. And I'm going to replay that towards the end of this segment. I do have, right up front here in the introduction, I've got some new material that I do want to cover with you. And then I'm going to let you hear that interview again, just in case you didn't get a chance to hear that over at the Polite Society podcast. I want to begin talking a little bit this week about a few things that I said in that interview that I want to correct. Every once in a while we make a few boo-boos, and I did that. So let's talk about the first one. What I said in that show, when Paul asked me about the printing laws here in the great state of Texas, meaning what happens to you if your gun prints? In other words, you're concealed carrying and you don't do such a great job. Basically, Texas has loosened the restrictions. If you accidentally, inadvertently print, if your gun accidentally, inadvertently shows, it's no longer a crime. If you intentionally don't print or don't conceal, if you intentionally don't conceal, well, then that's open carry, and that hasn't passed yet in Texas, so that's a crime. So I kind of messed that up a little bit on my interview over at Polite Society. And then when we were also talking about the Trijicon RMRs, I made a comment stating that you can adjust the red dot size on the RMRs, and I don't believe you can. I think you have to buy the appropriate RMR red dot sight for your pistol based on what size of a red dot that you wish to have. There are models of the Trijicon RMR that are adjustable brightness. In other words, that you can adjust the brightness of the dot, and there's also self-adjusting as far as the brightness, but I don't believe that you can select the size of the red dot as you can with some rifle scopes. Now, that's my understanding of it. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that that's pretty much how it works. Anyway, as I mentioned on the interview, I strongly recommend putting an RMR, a reflex sight, red dot reflex sight by Trijicon, on your pistol. Glock and M&P, Smith & Wesson M&P and Glock manufacture guns that are already ready to have optics mounted on the slide. If you have a gun that you want to have an RMR, a Trijicon RMR, or red dot sight put on it, I can't recommend strongly enough the work that Suarez International does over at One Source Tactical. Gabe and his team have been doing it for a long time. They kind of pioneered it. They have classes built around Trijicon RMRs, and, you know, it's pretty much kind of their ball game. I'm going to pause here for a minute and grab this call. All right, thanks for your patience. Anyway, so the folks over at Suarez International really kind of pioneered it, and like I said, they've built classes around it and everything. So check out onesourcetactical.com or go to suarezinternational.com. Leupold also makes some pretty good reflex red dot sights for pistols. Seems to be the wave of the future. I think before the end of the year, I'm going to get one of my Glocks, one of my Glock 19s, RMR'd is what they call it. I'm going to go ahead and send one of my slides in and have that done, because that's really a neat package. And again, you'll hear more about that in the interview coming up with Paul from the Polite Society podcast. Okay, I do want to cover a little bit of subject matter here before going to that interview. There's a great blog called Outdoor Hub, outdoorhub.com. And there's an article I've been meaning to comment on for quite some time. Tom McHale wrote an article that I will link to in the show notes. It's called 10 Things You Learn by Carrying a Gun Every Day. Well, let me tell you what. I've said it many times. You sure do learn a lot. I learn a lot. Every day it's a learning experience. That's kind of what my podcast here is all about. This is my journey, and I share it with you. I've been carrying a gun now since 2005, and I'm 10 years now. Still learning every time that I investigate all of this. How about you? So 10 Things You Learn by Carrying a Gun Every Day by Tom McHale. This is published in OutdoorHub.com. He says one thing is how clueless the average person is. And what he's talking about is when you first start carrying, you kind of make yourself think that everybody sees you, right? Everybody's going to see your gun. And then after a couple weeks, you get comfortable with it. It becomes part of you. And you realize they don't care. Or not that they don't care, but they don't notice. They're clueless. They're not paying attention. They're too worried about their iPhones or what's going on with their kids, or they're thinking about something else that's going on in their life, and they're just not paying attention. They really, other people, the general public, really just don't, they don't start checking people out to see if they're carrying guns. It just doesn't happen. So, you know, Tom is exactly right about that. And another point he makes that I really like is he says, how quickly anti-gun folks can change their mind. Especially temporarily, but some of them even permanently. Have you ever taken an anti-gun person shooting? Yeah, what happens to their attitude towards guns? If you can get them to the range and get a gun that's fun to shoot and get it into their hands, what changes? Think about their attitude. Tom in this article says when he and his wife went out for dinner one night, there were some very anti-gun people that couldn't understand why they would carry a gun. And when they were going to the car after dinner, they noticed some very suspicious characters hanging around a dark part of the parking lot looking at his wife. And these anti-gun people kind of turned around and said, you are carrying your gun with you, aren't you? So, the moral of the story is everybody likes a sheepdog. And isn't it amazing? Isn't it amazing? Someone could be anti-gun, but boy, when they feel that they're in danger, you know, and you're with them, they might say, you got your gun with you? Oh, hopefully you do. Hopefully you got your gun with you. And, you know, that's your opportunity to turn around and say to them, yes, I do, and you're a knucklehead because you don't. Anyway, next, he talks about the value of a good belt. Boy, isn't that important. And we talk about this in my interview with Paul from the Polite Society podcast coming up at the end of this episode. I've mentioned it before. Your belt is just as important as your holster. It's part of your concealed carry system. It distributes the weight of your gun. It helps to hold that gun tighter to your body, especially if you're concealing. Even if you're open carrying, it's important to have a good gun belt. And there are great gun belts today that don't look like gun belts. Sturdy Belt makes great ones. Concealment Solutions, Jason Christensen's company, Concealment Solutions, they make awesome looking gun belts that double for dress belts. High Noon makes excellent belts. If you're not worried too much about the looks, I can't recommend strongly enough Wilderness Tactical belts. Either instructor belts or all, just go to Wilderness Tactical, Google that, Wilderness Tactical belts, and check out what they've got to offer. Good stuff. But get a good belt, and of course, you know, holsters, I don't really need to go over. I've talked about that so much. I am going to be doing a YouTube video pretty soon, though, on all the different types of holsters I have, why I have them. And I use a lot of different types of holsters, and so I'll be talking about why I use those and in what situations and what scenarios that those help me with. Now, another point Tom makes, and by the way, you need to read the whole article because I'm paraphrasing here, but he says, you know, guns are heavy, and they are. Guns become heavy, even small guns, carried all day for 10, 12, 14, even 16 hours a day. Every gun is going to become Well, not every gun. But most guns are going to become heavy. You know, little pocket 380s probably aren't going to be heavy, or some of these little single-stack 9s are probably not going to be heavy by the end of the day. But they'll be heavier. That's why some people, when they say they carry these massive guns, like these big all-steel 1911s or these big all-steel Sig Sauers with tons of ammunition and everything in them. Boy, I tell you, for me, those things get massively heavy by the end of the day, and all I want to do is take that thing off. You ever been in that situation? Right? You can't wait to get home and take that thing off because it's so heavy and it's been dragging you down all day. It's why these little guns are popular. I'm going to talk about a little gun here coming up. But the last point that Tom McHale makes, and I really like it, he says, the longer you carry, the more you learn. The more you learn, the more you realize how much you don't know. Wow. Owning a gun won't necessarily protect you from crime. Going to the range to practice doesn't necessarily mean you're going to prevail in a fight. Carrying a gun's a matter of life and death, so make it a point to learn something new each and every day. Wow, that speaks for itself, doesn't it? So check that out. Check out that article he wrote in Outdoor Hub. I will link to it in the show notes. Now, before we get to the upcoming interview, I want to talk about a small gun. The new Glock 43 that just hit the market. You know, I put my name on the list over at Sparks Firearms, where Ben Branham works. And by the way, I can't say enough about Sparks Firearms. I think they're the best dealer in the greater San Antonio area. Steve Sparks, the owner, his prices are great. His service is great. Of course, Ben Branham's on his staff now, so they do such a great job. And, you know, together those guys work very well. They're at almost every gun show. I asked them to put my name on the list to get me a Glock 43 when they came in. And I got a phone call yesterday from Steve saying, Bob, guess what? Your Glock 43 is in. And I almost said, great, Steve, I'll be down there shortly in about an hour to pick it up. Then I realized that the price of the Glock 43 right now for people that have these guns is about $600 or more. I know there are deals out there for $459, law enforcement prices of less than $400, but try to find them in stock. Try to find somebody in stock that's not taking orders for the Glock 43. Try to find a shop that has them in stock that'll sell you one for $450. Just try that. It's pretty tough. People that have them in stock on GunBroker or dealers that have them, they're getting $650, sometimes $700. And so what I did is I told Steve, I said, you know what? You probably have a long waiting list for that gun. Find somebody that just has to have it now and make some extra money. There are fools out there who will shell out the $600 or $700 to get a Glock 43 right now. I hope you're not one of those fools. I can wait. Okay, I've got great single-stack 9mm that serve me just fine. I can't say enough good things about my Smith & Wesson M&P 9mm shield. I can't say enough good things about my Car Arms PM9. I can shoot them both well. I've practiced with them. I've trained with them. Right now, they're serving me just fine. As much as I love Glocks, I will wait until the everyday price of the Glock 43 is down where it should be, and I'll wait until they're readily available at all gun dealers that have them in stock, where I can go in there and I can pick one up right away. But I'm not going to shell out $600. And to be fair, Steve said I could have it for far less than that. He did give me a price that I'm not going to disclose on the air, where I could come pick it up today. But I said, no, you know what, Steve, go ahead. Go ahead and sell it to somebody else. You know, I believe in supporting local dealers that do a good job, and I wanted to support him. And so I figured he's probably got a long list of people that will stick out that kind of money to get their Glock 43 right away. However, sure looks like a nice gun. Looking forward to getting one. I'm a little disappointed that the magazine capacity is only 6 rounds. But I'm sure it won't be long. There will be plus one or plus two magazine extensions, probably made by Pierce and some of the others, that can be put on that gun and turn it into a 7 or an 8 round magazine. So I'll be getting my Glock 43 in due time when the prices come down and they're a little more readily available. All right, let's get to the interview that I did with Paul Lathrop on the Polite Society podcast. We talked about a lot of good topics. Enjoy.
Good afternoon. This is your captain speaking with just a little flight information. Coming up on the left, we're going to be catching a glimpse of the Grand Canyon. On the right, you can be able to see the Hoover Dam in just a few minutes. We're flying at an altitude of 37,000 feet, and our airspeed is 400 miles an hour. Couple little facts here. I'm packing a Colt King Cobra. That's a 357 caliber firearm with a black rubber grip and a 6-inch barrel. Also, the co-pilot is carrying a Kimber custom defense pistol with all the bells and whistles you'd expect from a custom gun of that kind, with an alloy frame and bevel treatment on the entire gun. And our chief flight attendant, Roger, has a Ruger Bearcat 22 with a hand-fluted cylinder. All three are capable of piercing body armor at a distance of up to 27 feet, and it can put a hole in human bone and flesh the size of the Grand Canyon, which, by the way, is coming up on the left-hand side of the plane, so just sit back and relax and enjoy the rest of the flight.
Hey, and welcome back to the interview portion of the Polite Society Podcast, powered by the Firearms Policy Coalition. This is our interview segment again, and Bob Main is joining us. Been a while since we've had you on the show. Thanks for coming back, Bob.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you. It has been a while, but glad to be back.
Well, the main reason I wanted to have you come back on is, and we've been announcing this weekly and honestly on every show for quite a while, you're coming up with Ben Branham to do some training here in just about a month. You're doing the Beyond Concealed Carry Enhance course up here. And
yeah, we're excited about it.
Yeah, I'm excited mainly just to meet you in person. I mean, of course, I want to take the training too, but I've talked to you about 500,000 times. I'm looking forward to actually meeting you in person.
But well, likewise, Paul.
If I could, to get started, could you tell everybody what the Concealed Carry Enhanced course is?
Yeah, the Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced is basically an expanded version of our one-day Beyond Concealed Carry. And if you go to handgunworld.com and read the course description, what we do is we start off at first making sure that everybody's got their marksmanship dialed in and that they're hitting the target where they're supposed to. And believe it or not, we get everybody making sure that they shoot in real nice tight groups. But we're going to progress pretty quickly into some really fun techniques, moving and shooting, some dynamic movement, shooting from cover, defensive scenarios. One of the reasons we call it enhanced is because we've added some things into it, like some hostage shooting and some other unique ways to shoot in hallways in your house and things like that. So that's one of the reasons why we call it enhanced. It's 2 full days, and people are going to get a lot out of it.
What should we be expecting for round count out of this class?
Minimum 500. And whenever an instructor says they're going to shoot a minimum, that's kind of like training lingo for we're shooting more than that. So I would say if you don't bring 600 rounds, you're going to be sorry.
Okay. All right. 600 rounds in 2 days, that's a lot of shooting.
That's a lot of shooting. Ben and I don't believe in running a slow class. We run a pretty quick class. You know, you're not going to be left behind, so we do take the personal attention to make sure that everybody gets what they need from the instructor in terms of personal attention. So don't feel uncomfortable that you might fall behind. But it's going to be we cover a lot of scenarios that we feel that an ordinary civilian would encounter. And that's one of the reasons why we call it Beyond Concealed Carry, because it's training beyond what you need for the state-mandated concealed requirements.
Very, very cool. Yeah, it's one of the things you and I have had discussions about this in the past, I'm very pleased to say that you have, since we first talked about it, you've changed your mind. I've always been a big proponent of training is a wonderful thing. If you've got a firearm, get training. After you get a firearm, that should be your first expense. Before getting more firearms, you should get training on what you got. But when we first talked here a couple years ago, it's been a while, but you were a proponent of, well, maybe in some cases mandatory training might be useful, but I'm really glad that I heard on your show over a year now that you decided that, you know, you shouldn't have to get training just to get a firearm.
Well, yeah, I've reversed myself on that. You know, and one of the reasons that, you know, I reserve the right to change my mind, as everybody should. Everybody should be able to take a close, careful look at the facts, see what's going on, and decide whether you really want to or not. I've just seen how the government screws things up. So, you know, leaving training in the hands of the government or even a requirement by the government that sets the standards, I just don't like that. Now, having said that, I am going to say that, and I think it was you that I got this from, Paul, I do share the opinion that I think it's unacceptable if you own firearms and don't get training. Mm-hmm. I think it's personally unacceptable, but I don't think it should be law.
I agree. I think at one point I was using the analogy of having firearms and not getting training to smoking. Yeah, it used to be that smoking was the norm in society, that more people smoked than didn't. And now speaking as a smoker, I feel like a leper when I'm out in public because, man, you're still smoking those things. We need to make it so that, you know, people that get firearms want to get training.
Yeah, and that's the thing, and that's one of the reasons why Ben and I like to make our classes fun. You're going to have a tremendous amount of fun. This class is over half full already. You're going to have a tremendous amount of fun learning to shoot your firearm and be better with it. And even if you're somebody that's been shooting all your life, I promise you that you're going to walk away from this with at least one or two things that you didn't know.
One thing we did when we posted up yesterday and said we were going to be doing the show live, you were going to be joining us and asked if people wanted, you know, any questions they wanted to ask you. And Simon Says Train commented, he says, Bob always talks about handguns on his podcast, which is understandable, being it's the Handgun World podcast. Does he own any rifles? If so, what kind? And what does he think of RMR on pistols or concealed carry in self-defense? So a couple different ones in there. First of all, do you own any rifles?
Very good questions. I own two rifles. I have two AR-15s. I've talked about rifles occasionally on my show, even though it's mostly handgun-oriented. I have two AR-15s. I have a SIG M400 that I've got an optic on, and I have I don't know how many people have heard the brand of Delton, but Delton has made a lot of AR receivers and parts for other manufacturers. That was actually the first AR-15 that I have, and it's stone-cold reliable. So I've got those two ARs, and I like them a lot.
Okay. What about RMR on pistols?
I'm a huge proponent of it. I have to, in full disclosure, say I don't own a pistol yet with an RMR on it, but I've shot several of them, and I'm a huge proponent of that. If that fits your budget, I would say before you go out and purchase another firearm, RMR one of your semi-autos, and you're going to be perfectly happy with it. You're going to love it. And one of the reasons is, you know, the person who sent you that question asked if I own any rifles. One of the things I like about, especially ARs, people drop an optic on the AR, and what happens? They don't use their iron sights, or they co-witness. The nice thing about that red dot is you've got one point of reference as a sight. You're basically looking at the red dot, you're putting it on target, and you're pressing the trigger. That's all you have to worry about. It's so simple, and when you train with that, you get good at it. Same thing on a pistol. Instead of lining up front sight with rear sight and trying to figure out, okay, where is this going to hit, point of aim, point of impact, you got a red dot. Put your red dot on the target, press the trigger.
It would seem to me that there would be some issues. I've seen them a ton in competitions.
Mm-hmm.
But it would seem to me there would be an issue with concealment, and having never fired one, I wouldn't know, but I think maybe there'd be an issue with concealment there because you're putting, especially most carry guns are mid-size or smaller. You're gonna have an issue with concealment with putting a red dot on the handgun.
Absolutely not. I have witnessed many people carrying a red dot pistol. And I cannot tell the difference between that and a regular pistol. If it's mounted on the top of the slide in front of the rear sight where it's supposed to be mounted and where it's supposed to be drilled and mounted on the pistol, with the right holster And again, it's always with the right holster. Plenty of holster makers make holsters with a cutout that will accommodate the red dot. It's perfectly concealable. My Glock 19 or Glock 26 would be just as concealable with a red dot as without.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, one other thing, I don't know if we've talked about this yet, when you come on my show, but one other thing I wanted to talk to you about is you normally in your, in Texas, you've got to conceal. They don't have yet open carry.
Yet.
I'll say Texas has, now didn't I remember, I wish Rachel was with us today, but she's not. They loosened up their concealed where incidental, showing of your handgun is, if you print, you're not going to be put in jail for the rest of your life. But let's just say were open carry to come to Texas, would Bob Main open carry?
Well, two questions you got there, Paul. First of all, I want to clarify something. In the past, if you printed with your firearm, you didn't really go to jail the rest of your life. It was a crime you could be charged with.
Right.
You could be charged with the crime, but it really wasn't anything super serious. But yes, they loosened that. Basically, I'm pretty much, I got this about 90% right. It's no longer a crime if your handgun prints in Texas. I firmly believe that open carry is going to pass and that'll get rid of that. Now, would Bob Main open carry? I've said on my show many times, probably not. As a matter of fact, probably a 95% chance that I won't open carry. I believe that everybody should have the right to do that, and I support it, but I'll probably choose not to.
Okay, very cool. I myself, I'm an open carry advocate. I do open carry my handgun when I'm at home. I don't do it on the road. I have an open carry holster with retention. I've got a Concealment Solutions Sidewinder Pro that's got retention strap on it. So I believe I'm taking the best precautions I can. But on the one thing I like about especially that holster, I slip on a nice loose shirt over the top of it, a nice big Hawaiian print shirt over the top of it. Bingo, it's concealed. And yet I still got the advantage of an extremely fast draw.
It's called the Sidewinder Pro?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I spoke to Jason a few weeks ago, and he's working on some new stuff. But since you brought him up and you brought up Concealment Solutions, the person who emailed that question in earlier about RMR pistols, mm-hmm. I believe Jason will make you a holster for an RMR pistol. I believe that he will if you special order it from him.
Yeah. He will make you anything. He is very helpful when it comes to customizing issues like that. I had the same problem when I got my double stack para and I put it up against my double stack Glock and noticed the magazine thicknesses were different. And mm-hmm. I talked to him about it and he said, send me a mag. I'll get it done. And he absolutely did a great job.
Yeah, hey, Paul, can I mention something? Thanks, Gary. Can I mention something else about an RMR on a pistol?
Certainly.
And for those of you who might not know exactly what we're talking about a Trijicon RMR reflex red dot sight, similar to what goes on AR-15s. One nice thing about having that is when you get to be someone like me, I'm 53 and my eyes are just not what they used to be. What's really cool is, you know, your eyes pick up that red dot. I don't care how old you are. There are RMRs with adjustable brightness of the red dot. You can adjust the reticle size. So you can basically tailor that red dot to how your eyes are. And that's what's really nice. And you're not sacrificing concealment. You can also co-witness the iron sights with the red dot RMR. So I think it's a great setup. Probably before the end of the year, I'll put one on one of my Glocks.
Yeah, it is a really nice setup. I've talked to a couple of USPSA shooters that are going that route, and you know, I haven't gone that way myself yet, but it does make sense the way they talk about shooting with them.
Correct me if I'm wrong, guys. I don't think, though, the IDPA has set up a division yet for optics, have they?
I don't believe so.
No, USPSA does, but I don't think that IDPA has. But regardless, there's nothing to stop you from going to shoot a local competition match with a with an optic and practice with it and things like that.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I tell people all the time that, that have guns that have modifications, things like that. If the only thing they can make it to is an IDPA, they won't disqualify you, but they will score you and take the points off for modifications to a gun that don't fit into any IDPA class.
Right.
So you can still practice shooting and moving, which is really tough to do here in the Midwest. There's very few outdoor ranges that, and even those don't let you move around a lot. So competition is a great way to practice shooting and moving. And, if you can't, if you have something like an IMR or something unique on your firearm that does not fit into a class in IDPA, you can still shoot IDPA.
All right, Bob. Well, we do need to step aside to break here. We're going to go ahead and do that. And we've got one more segment with Bob Main when we come back, and we'll do that right after this.
Okay, during this break time, I would like to say that last week I forgot to mention that Chaz, the unnamed trucker from the Road Gunner podcast, another good podcast you should be listening to, and Tracy Thronberg are going to be joining Ben Branham and I this November in San Antonio. And we are going to teach Beyond Concealed Carry Advanced, the level 2, the next step. If you've taken Beyond Concealed Carry with us, come to this class. This is the next step. It's the advanced level 2 class. A lot of good tactical techniques. The four of us are going to be teaching the class. We're going to take the 2 days and we're going to break it up evenly into four segments, and Chaz and Tracy have promised that they're going to come down, they're going to teach some things that really are going to add to this class nicely. Go to handgunworld.com. You can see a course description. You can get signed up if you want. That's going to be the weekend before Thanksgiving in November. Believe it or not, signups have already started. This is going to be an excellent event. Chaz from the Road Gunner podcast, Tracy Thronberg from Austin, Texas, a very good trainer. She's going to be spending a lot of good time with us, myself and Ben Branham. Don't forget, we're coming to Northern Ohio to teach Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced. And there's still a little bit of room, although not much, for the class coming up in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced, where we're going to be teaming up with Paul Lathrop from the Polite Society podcast. All right, let's get to segment number two.
Hey, we're back with Bob Main. Of course, this is the second interview segment on the Polite Society podcast, powered by the Firearms Policy Coalition. Bob, I wanted to ask, you a while back started to, you bought a couple 1911s and were doing a long-term test with those 1911s. Previously, well, as kind of a joke, you'd been known as a 1911 hater, but, yeah. Well, what did you think? Have you switched your carry guns to either of those 1911s you were testing? And what did you think overall of the 1911 as a carry gun?
I have not switched my carry guns to a 1911. And please don't anybody take this the wrong way. What do I think of them? I think, as I mentioned on my show a couple times after I concluded the one-year experiment, I think they're too heavy, too low a capacity for what you get and for what you have to go through to carry them and conceal them. Having said that, the CCO 1911 I have, the commander size with the officer's grip, the SIG RCS that I have, it carries wonderfully in terms of size. That short grip and the commander size barrel, it's so well balanced. It's nice. But you know what? It still weighs more than my G19 or my M&P9 compact, and I just don't see the point. With the ammo being so good and such little difference between 9 and 45, I didn't say no difference, but I said such little difference. Having the extra.
That's sorry. Right.
Maybe he likes 1911s.
No, you didn't hear me barking, Bob.
I think your dog is upset. He likes 1911s, and he's getting all mad at me. Anyway, between the little difference in the ammo and the low capacity and the heaviness of the guns, that's why I don't carry them.
Well, I have to, we've talked about it on this show before. I have been listening to your comparison and review as you've been carrying the two. I've been carrying, I've been shooting 1911s for 30 years and carrying for four years. And after going through Mag 40, I agree that I did not have the magazine capacity that I wanted, so I bought the Para 1445.
Aha, nice.
So now I have 15 rounds and obviously two 14-round magazines on the other side.
Yes, you do.
And it is 17/100ths thicker, wider than a G19.
Mm-hmm. That's not
heavier.
Much.
I'll give you it's heavier, but as far as concealability inside the help me out. What does Jason call the inside the waistband?
Black Mamba.
Yep.
Yeah, the Black Mamba. I don't have a 19 to compare it with, a Glock 19, but I have no problem with it. It rocks great for me.
Now, you know what? Let me address what Gary just said. You know, Gary, you said you've been shooting them for 30 years. As I mentioned in my podcast, if you're willing to marry the platform, if you're willing to make a total commitment to a 1911, or you're somebody who's been shooting them for 15, 20, 30 years like Gary, well, then by all means, carry it. If you're used to that gun, but my test was switching back and forth. Mine was switching from Striker to 1911, back to Striker, back to 1911, back to Striker, back to 1911. So, for most people, I just don't think that works. I think there's some problems with that.
My issues with the 1911 are simply the safeties. I've been shooting a Glock for the past 3 years, and I know for an absolute certainty if the world falls down around me and I need to use my firearm to protect myself or my family, I'm not going to forget the safety on my Glock.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, or your M&P or your XD or any of the Striker fired out there that are like without the thumb safety. But, you know, Gary's probably pretty doggone good with that safety. He probably disengages it without even giving it any thought because he's been shooting it for so long.
Yeah.
Right. And I did – I mean, I have literally listened to your show since both – actually, both these shows since – I mean, since the beginning. I've heard every episode fairly recent, you know. And, you know, I've heard what you said, and it makes perfect sense to me. And if I was in a competition and I missed a safety, yeah, I would probably be double thinking this like crazy. But that's never happened to me.
Yeah.
So, that makes total sense from a, it's the same thing with testing ammunition. You don't take a gun that misfires once out of every 200-300 rounds and make it a personal defense gun, because that's not reliable enough for me.
You just reminded me of something. Somebody who was recently on my show, not all that long ago. I don't know if this person meant it as a joke or not, but basically made the comment, if it can get through two magazines without malfunctioning, that it's good to go because you're never going to shoot more than two magazines at somebody, which I think is totally, totally ridiculous.
That's awful low for me. very, very low for me. I'm going to want it to go through at the very least a couple hundred rounds with the ammunition that I use for self-defense.
At least, minimum 200 plus. And that's the point. If you can't make it through your personal defense rounds, 200 perfect, then I really don't think that's your personal defensive carry gun. That's not enough. Because, you're only going to use two magazines, but you don't know where that failure is going to come in that 200, and if it's going to be one of those two magazines or the third round in the first magazine, you certainly don't want to be using that gun. So yeah, you're 100% right.
Well, let me tell you something. Not only are you going to maybe only use two magazines, you probably won't even use one magazine.
Sure.
Right. You know, and that's something else that I want to say, you know, and which is why I favor capacity over lower capacity. And congratulations, Gary, you went out and you got a big beefy 45 that holds a lot of rounds. But the idea that somebody is carrying an extra magazine so they can put more ammo in the gun in the middle of a fight, I think is really stretching it. The odds of that actually happening is slim. Carrying an extra magazine is good if you have a malfunction. I think that a lot more likely than you shooting all 8 rounds and then, oh, hey, the bad guy's still here. Let me stick another 8 rounds in there and see if I can fire more at him. That's rare. I mean,
very rare.
How many shootings have been analyzed where somebody had to go to their second magazine to put more ammo in the gun?
Where the person isn't wearing a uniform, I can't remember a single one.
Where the person isn't wearing a uniform, that is correct. Yes, you can't remember a single one. So be careful, folks. I just want to extend a word of caution, and that is don't have a false sense of security that because you have a second magazine of ammo that you now have twice the ammo capacity for a fight, because those odds are slim.
Yeah. Yeah, like you said, and I concur 100%, that second magazine is more a malfunction magazine than a I-need-to-keep-shooting magazine. I mean,
yeah.
Sure, once in a, who knows, 10,000 times it happens, but it's not common enough to look at it that way. So you got to practice those malfunction drills, everybody. Yeah.
Hey, Paul, how much time do we have left?
In this segment, we got about 7 minutes.
Okay. Can I address something else about the person that emailed in the question?
Certainly.
You know, he asked about rifles. I used to have a very nice AK, a real nice one. I wanted to get a second AR, and at that time I had to make some room in my budget, so I helped the AK find another home. But there's nothing wrong with AKs. If you learn to shoot them, take a good class with an AK, they're wonderful weapons.
You bet, yeah. I've got no issues with if somebody wants to use an AK or AR or you know really I've got a buddy who his trunk gun is a taper, you know, another, you know,
oh, it's wow, a trunk gun,
yeah.
Holy cow, that's awesome. For a
it's a little expensive, but yeah, and that's what he wants to use for his trunk, yeah. Gun and it you know it's sized really great for it, but that's an awful lot of money to be kept in your trunk.
Well, but you know what? You say it's an awful lot of money to keep in your trunk, but as I always say on my show, how much is your life worth?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You really have to ask that question. How much is your life worth? That's why I've made the comment, and I've kind of – I got some nasty emails when I said this once on my show. Don't cheap out on stuff.
Well, you're not going to carry I don't want to be considered a snob or anything, but you're not going to – If your choice for a self-defense handgun is a 25 Jennings, I'm sorry, you need to think again.
Right, that's what I was talking about. You know, or if you have a nice 1911 that Gary has, and then you get a holster that's $15.95 off of the internet, and you carry it in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't put your $1,500 handgun into a $15 Uncle Mike's holster. Yeah, no. Also, and the other thing, I personally, I hate to admit this, I've been carrying about 3 years now, an everyday carry type of situation, where I pants on, gun on, and I only recently got a hold of Jason over at Concealment Solutions and got a dedicated gun belt, a belt that was made to carry a gun. And folks,
I have three of them. I got three of them.
If you carry a gun every day, you need a dedicated gun belt. You will not believe the stability of those things.
I think you gave me a podcast idea, Paul.
there you go.
Yeah, you definitely need to have a dedicated gun belt. I'm glad you brought that point up.
So we are coming up on the end of the segment here. Before we go off, I would be really remiss if I didn't ask. I mean, I'm sure a lot of our listeners listen to your show, but you've had you've had some horrible luck with help in your family.
Yeah.
But you yourself have had some battles with cancer. You're home now. It sounds like you're doing better. Are you doing better? How are things for you health-wise?
I am doing better. The last two tests I've had shows that I am cancer-free. Praise God for that. And the wonderful doctors at MD Anderson in Houston, both of them deserve a lot of credit. I went through the stem cell transplant. I am home. I've been home since the end of February. And I'm working kind of part-time. I'm not taking long 3- and 4-day trips like I used to. I'm taking real short trips and mainly working around from home and from my computer and telephone and things. I'll probably be back full swing middle to late of May in terms of full-time working. But I'm feeling fairly decent, just trying to shake off a couple of nagging little things, mainly from the treatment. But otherwise, I'm feeling all right.
Very, very cool.
That's good to hear.
I don't mind saying this on the air. You and your whole family. I know your wife's got health issues,
yes.
But you've been in our prayers, and
thank you.
And I certainly hope the best for both you and your wife. For the listeners. Bob's, and I hope I'm not stepping out of line here, but you mentioned on your show that Bob's wife was diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's with ALS
2 years ago.
Yeah, and there's not a cure for that, not that they found yet.
Nope.
So she certainly still needs your prayers, and we would appreciate it if you'd send some her way. But we do need to step off to break here, and when we come back, we've got DGUs, and we'll get to those DGUs right after this.
England, Wales, Scotland, Australia, Canada, and 12 other industrialized and largely disarmed nations have higher violent crime rates than the U.S., This is according to a Dutch Ministry of Justice multinational survey. According to that survey, England and Australia are twice as vicious as America, with higher rates of robberies, muggings, and assaults. Switzerland, a well-armed nation, has a violent crime rate about the same as ours. Disarmed countries are dangerous countries, and America's few disarmed cities are the most dangerous in the Union. This is no coincidence. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Well, that's all for this episode, folks. I'm Bob Main. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Don't forget about our Shooters Club. If you want to support us and watch some excellent training videos, you can sign up for our Shooters Club and also my Amazon account. You don't have to spend any extra money to support the Handgun World podcast. Next time that you decide to make a purchase on Amazon, just go to handgunworld.com first, click my link, my Amazon store link, and make your purchases through my affiliate account. And the Amazon affiliate program will give me a little bit of a commission, and proceeds help to benefit the Handgun World podcast. Folks, remember that the loudest sound a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. Catch you next week. Goodbye.